right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Friday, October 27th, 2017. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Friday, everyone. It is a chilly 46 degrees, overcast and colorful here in upstate New York. So where did we leave off yesterday? We titled the show AI Robots, Sophia, UN, Dubai, NEOM, and Tech Mind Hijacking. We looked at the coming of artificial intelligence like we have many, many times before, but it was very surprising to me to start seeing the Middle East participating in this orgy of trying to integrate artificial intelligence into every facet of our lives. And I think today is going to be a lot of the same, and this is going to be quite a dystopic show. I came across a few things this morning that connected dots, so I put together a little story for you. So I ran across something out of Motherboard. No, not Motherboard. This is Mother Jones. Close, but not quite. Titled, You Will Lose Your Jobs to a Robot Sooner Than You Think. Ding! Don't believe them when they tell you not to worry about it, because it is coming faster than we possibly imagine. Automation helped bring on the age of Trump, and they keep blaming now. They're trying to, like, kind of play this good cop, bad cop. Oh, look at Trump did this. But what will AI bring? AI, probably, remember, they have the toxic comment detector out there now. I want to tell you straight off, and that is the author of the story, Kevin Drum. I want to tell you straight off what the story is about. Sometime in the next 40 years, robots are going to take your job. I don't care what your job is. If you dig ditches, a robot will dig them better. And if you're a magazine writer, a robot will write your articles better. And if you're a doctor, IBM's Watson will no longer assist you in finding the right diagnosis from its database of millions of case studies and journal articles. It will just be a better doctor than you. CEO, sorry, robots run companies better than you. Artistic types, well, robots will paint and write and sculpt better than you. You think you have social skills that no robot can match? Yes, they can. Within 20 years, maybe half of you will be out of jobs. And a couple of decades after that, most of you will be out of jobs. And in one sense, this all sounds great. Let the robots have all the damn jobs. No more dragging yourself out of bed at 6 a.m. or spending long days on your feet. We'll be free to read and write poetry or play video games or whatever we want to do. In a century from now, this is most likely how things will turn out, and humanity will enter a golden age, or not, maybe the dark age. But what about 20 years from now or 30? We don't all have to be out of jobs by then, but a lot of us will, and it will be no golden age. Until we figure out how to fairly distribute the fruits of robots, it will be an era of mass joblessness and mass poverty. And hold on one second. I just realized I had a tab in the wrong place. So mass poverty, a lot to look forward to. Working class job losses played a big role in the 2016 election. And if we don't want a long succession of demagogues blustering their way into office because the machines are taking away people's livelihoods, this needs to change and fast. Yeah, let's put an AI in charge. Along with global warming, and let's throw that in as well, the transition to a workless future is the biggest challenge by far. That progresses politics, and not to mention all of humanity, and yet it's barely on our radar. Now, that's kind of a buzzkill, isn't it? Luckily, it's traditional that stories about difficult or technical subjects open with an entertaining and provocative antidote. This idea allows readers to ease into daunting material. So here's one for you. Last year at Christmas, I was over at my mother's house, not me, this person, and mentioned that I'd recently read an article about Google Translate. Turns out that a few weeks previously, without telling anyone, Google had switched over to a new machine learning algorithm. Now, remember I talked to you about that for the search engine as well. We had the head of AI take over when the original guy that used to run the Google search engine retired. Well, it looks like Kurzweil, with some of his Google Translate stuff, also turned AI onto that data. Almost overnight, the quality of its translation skyrocketed, and I had noticed some improvement myself, but I had chalked it up to the usual incremental progress these kinds of things go through. I hadn't realized what was due to a quantum leap in software. But if Google's translation algorithm was better, did that mean that its voice recognition was better too? This is one of the things I want to point out. This whole voice recognition and voice activation technology that we read about last week. You know, we got Google and we got Alexa and we got all of our virtual assistants and our smartphones, our smart homes. Everything is going to be about voice. But I don't know if you guys remember last year, I think we covered a few of these stories a few times about how with just the sound of your voice, they could diagnose disease. And I know it sounds strange, but they are applying databases of biostatistics, they can pinpoint, utilizing artificial intelligence, signs that maybe humans don't recognize. But when you have a large data set, they start showing up in the charts. Researchers enlist smartphones and machine learning to find vocal patterns that might signify mental disorders, such as post-traumatic stress disorder, or even physical disorders, such as heart disease. Charles Maymar had been a psychiatrist for 40 years, but when a combat veteran came into his office for an evaluation, he still cannot diagnose post-traumatic stress disorder with 100% accuracy. You would think that if a warfighter came into my office, and I'd be able to decide if they had PTSD or not, but what if they're ashamed to tell me about their problems, or they don't want to lose their high security clearance, or I ask them about their disturbing dreams, and they tell me that they're sleeping well? Maymar, who is the chair of the Department of Psychiatry at New York's University Langone Medical Center, is hoping to find answers in their speech. Now think about this. As they are training the machine, I've talked about this before, to find the chinks in the human armor, to be able to bag tag and track even our smallest facial tics that happen. We read about that as well, being able to use surveillance video and micro expressions, like some of the best law enforcement agents that have been trained out there, except even better, as they start putting all this data into the cloud and we start turning over our daily lives to being run and optimized by these super intelligent devices that are rolling out every single day, not only on our smartphones and into our homes, but also into medicine and into the war theater. And how do you think that's going to end up for us in the end? So anyway, so Google switched over to a new machine learning algorithm, and almost overnight quality in the translation skyrocketed, making them better surveillance tools. I've noticed some improvement, but I chalked it up to the usual increments and realized it was due to a quantum leap in software. But if Google's translation algorithm was better, what did it mean for its voice recognition and its ability to answer queries? How could we test that? Well, we decided to open presence instead of cognating over this. But after that was over, the subject of erasers came up. Which ones are best? Clear, black, traditional, pink? And come to think of it, what? I'll ask Google. So we pulled out my phone and said, why are erasers pink? Half a second later, Google told me, not impressed, well, you should be. We all know that phones that can recognize voices tolerably well these days, and we know that they can find the nearest cafe or the trendiest recipe, but what about something entirely random and not a simple who, what, or when question? There was this why question, and it wasn't about a single pink use eraser or why erasers are jinxed. Google has to be smart enough to figure out in the context that I said pink and that I am asking about a historical reason for the color of erasers, not their health or the way they are shaped. And it did it in less than a second with nothing more than a cheap little microprocessor and a slow link to the internet. Well, it's going to be a little bit creepy, but we read the other day about Google's AI replicating itself and learning by running scenarios in its virtual mind millions of times over and over and over. In case you are curious, Google got the answers from Design Sponge. The eraser was originally produced by the Eberhard Faber Company. Erasers featured pumice, volcanic ash from Italy that gave them their abrasive quality, along with their distinctive color and smell. Still not impressed? Well, when Watson famously won Jeopardy against the two best humans of all time, and remember we read about Google Zero, AlphaGo Zero, that not only beat out the best human Go champion, but also did it with absolutely no human intervention at all. It taught itself. This is literally in Crazyville with some of this AI. And I just saw another one of the big boys coming out the other day going, oh, no, no, no. You guys got it wrong. You're watching too many movies. Exactly like Sophia said in her interview the other day. So anyway, I don't know if I want to read about pink erasers here, but it is pretty amazing. All of this is a sign that AI is improving, and we've said this one many times, exponentially in a product of both better computer hardware and software. Hardware has historically followed a growth curve called Moore's Law, in which power and efficiency double every couple years, but recent improvements in software algorithms have made them even more explosive. Kabam! But for a long time, these advances didn't seem very impressive, and going from the brain power of bacterium to the brain power of a nematode might technically represent an enormous leap, but on a practical level, it doesn't get us that much closer to true artificial intelligence. However, if you keep doubling up for a while, eventually those doubling cycles take you from the brain power of a lizard to the brain power of a mouse, and then to a monkey, and then what? Once that happens, human-level AI is just a short step away. And this can be hard to imagine, so there is a chart to show what an exponential doubling curve looks like, measuring in petaflops, which are quadrillions of calculations per second. During the first 70 years of the digital era, computing power doubled every couple years, and that produced steadily improving accounting software, airplane reservation systems, weather forecasting, Spotify, and the like. But the scale of the human brain, essentially estimated at 10 to 50 petaflops, it produced a computer power so minuscule that you can hardly see any change at all. Around 2025, we will start to see visible progress toward AI, and a decade later, we will be about one-tenth the power of a human brain, and a decade after that, we'll have a full human brain, and it will seem like it happened overnight, but it's really a result of a century of steady, almost imperceptible progress. So, all right, then I ran across, and actually, I was remembering Billy Gates chiming in at one point before about how we could tax robots, especially after things such as Sophia was granted personhood yesterday in Saudi Arabia. Bill Gates plans to tax robots, and this is how it could actually happen. I don't know if I want to get into that, but he's got this whole idea of how he could fund the eugenic society of pleasure and free time of the future by putting a tax on robots. But I ran across something out of a publication called access-ai.com. Personal robot market expected to be worth $34 billion by 2022. A report exploring the global market for personal robots has predicted that it will be worth $34.1 billion by 2022. And due to increasing competition in the market, personal robot manufacturers are investing in emerging technologies. Robots are increasingly being equipped with artificial intelligence to allow them to further assist their owners. And Hanson Robotics created Sophia, an expressive humanoid powered by an AI chatbot. Sophia has the ability to talk and is designed to help humans in healthcare, education, and customer service. And then another company, Mayfield Robotics, also introduced its domestic robot Curie, K-U-R-I, at CES this year. That's the Consumer Electronics Show. And activated by voice commands, ding, Curie uses machine learning and facial recognition technologies that allow it to interact with your family as well as map out your home. Now, we talked about the Roomba, the new Roomba mapping out your house, which gives it the ability to be able to vacuum without running into obstacles. Well, now you're going to have a home personal robot that does that as well. The global personal robot market size share development growth and demand forecast for 2022. Reports from research and markets expect the demand for the technology will only continue to grow as people get sucked into the machine. Guys, this is the Trojan horse. You are bringing it into your homes, into your lives, into your bodies if you get an implant. Remember, they've been trying to make me get an implant. Come on, it'll help you. No. There are some major ethical boundaries for that one for me. Anyway, the report names the key trends in personal robotics as open software platforms that can be used for emergence with personal robots with artificial intelligence and new entries of smartphone companies in the global personal robot market. Based on type, cleaning robots continue to have the largest market. I kind of like a cleaning robot. And expected to generate the largest revenue, that would be Roomba. And the U.S. has the largest market for personal robots, but one of the largest market opportunities is the growing demand for care bots in Japan. We've talked about that one as well, as the Japanese population is aging more rapidly than other countries. Due to the growing aging population, in such as Japan, the demand for humanoid robots that are useful is expected to increase. And another element driving demand for personal robots in developing countries is disposable income and the need for convenience combined with the declining price of these robots. The average price of a personal robot has declined 27% between 2005 and 2014. Remember, I told you it's all about the price point. You know, if they get it down to like $99, and that's where the Amazon Echo is kind of gearing itself to give you a smart home, which is selling you the dangling carrot of convenience, as well as being able to shop, which is like that little dopamine ding every time you get to buy something. Their price is likely to further decline another 22% between 2015 and 2025. Key players in the market would include Honda. I'm trying to remember the name of that robot. Sony, Samsung, and Hasbro. I don't know if I've seen those. So, I thought this was interesting as well. Let's see if I can get there. Oh, no, don't make me sing. Don't make me sing. All right. 70%, which I found this kind of surprising. 70% of people harbor fears of AI, with a quarter expecting robots to take over. Now, you wonder why they're trying to sell you the concept with creations such as Sophia getting on the world stage and being the world's first and giving speeches at global conferences about why she made a statement but us watching too many Hollywood movies. Remember, that's a plant. That's to get you to doubt your gut feelings. But don't doubt your gut feelings, because this gets even worse, and we're going to continue here. So 70% of people surveyed, the survey says, fear the coming AI, and a quarter of those people think that they'll take over. The subject of AI is often a contentious one, and for many it is filled with optimism, like the people moving to Neom, and once unimaginable excitement of what it could be. But for others, the very thought can fill a wild science fiction influenced, oh yeah, imagination. Oh, but it's not an imagination. I've been pretty good with my predictions of dread and fear of the unknown. The results of this new survey from Pegasystems, which can be viewed online, and I will link to this article, illustrates the point perfectly. A research firm surveyed 6,000 adults in North America, the European Union, and APEC to gain an insight into people's feelings toward AI and its use in interacting with businesses. According to the results, 35% say they would be comfortable with a business using some form of AI to interact with them, while 28% said that they were uncomfortable. A leading 35% said that they were neither comfortable nor uncomfortable due to a lack of knowledge or opinion. Many consumers are excited to embrace the benefits of AI and see a promising future ahead, the statement read. Of course, for investors, it will be. But some harbor deep-rooted fears about AI, like Elon Musk, and some still prefer the familiarity of a human touch over a faceless machine when given the option. For others, the AI experience isn't yet living up to their expectations, and across the board, we found most consumers just don't understand AI, unless you listen to the show, realizing how it already touches our lives every day. Surprise! It's in all your homes. Many consumers are excited to embrace the benefits. And among their concerns about AI, though dubbed as fear of the unknown in the report, showed a staggering 70% had some form of fear around its potent potential impact on humanity and the world. And this is despite 70% stating that they understood what artificial intelligence actually was. Then, when questioned, which of the following scares you most about the use of AI in society, the results showed 33% said, it is never going to know me and my preferences as well as a human being. 24% said the rise of the robots and enslavement of humanity. I probably would have chosen that one. 10% said finding that I get better with AU than I do with my friends and family. I think that means AI. 5% says robots uncovering my deepest secrets. And I think that will happen as they are scanning you via virtual fish tanks at airports, and 28% said none of the above. The statement read, our survey finds that more than 70% of consumers harbor some sort of fear of artificial intelligence, and yes, a quarter of them even worry about machines taking over the world. And this is a basic mistrust that businesses must face ahead and overcome. And this takes time and psychological manipulation to get you running after the dopamine carrot and convenience, and a well-thought-out strategy to introduce the benefits of AI and gradually increase consumers' comfort levels. And I have that story here somewhere. Wait a minute. Where did it go? Uh-oh. I don't know. I closed a few things to make sure I kept my browser's memory in a good operating area, but I can't see it now. Anyway, so talk about consumer robotics. We've talked about one I used to joke about. That was our little buddy Jibo. Remember Jibo? Jibo was the perfect size to dropkick too. And he was so obnoxious. They had a promo video where he was talking to family members and reading books to your children at night in their room alone. It was pretty frightening, I thought. But they started a Kickstarter. And then Jibo had some setbacks. Well, listen to this, out of slashgear.com. October 26th, that was yesterday, 2017, new Jibo ship date drops social robots into Alexa's new world. Remember Jibo? I remember Jibo. And I remember Jibo's little anti-promo video that was pretty funny as well. Social robot promised to be your family's best house guest ever. All the way back to 2014, when its lifelike movements and witty quips, but delayed followed, of course. But now the company says it is finally ready to launch it. Jibo certainly had some solid bona fides behind it. The company was founded by MIT robotics expert Cynthia Bezerel and included a roster of engineering talent along with former Disney animators, of course, responsible for the bobble-headed bot's movements. The result, the promise went, was a robo-companion that even though it had only an amorphous ball for a face, it could be just as interactive and personable than a more lifelike creation. The company also had big ambitions for Jibo's interactions. It had developed its own voice control system with the robot able to recognize people via its cameras and then hold conversations with them. Jibo planned to court developers for third-party applications and services too, but unfortunately, the path to launching a companion robot turned out to be trickier than expected. Jibo's team initially expected to have it on market by 2016, but a series of delays saw that eventually pushed back into 2017, while pre-orders outside of North America were canceled completely. Now at the tail end of 2017, Jibo is back with another launch date. Come November 7th, and I believe that's just a week or so from now, the company says Jibo pre-orders will begin shipping. Now we're starting a new age at Jibo. New orders are being taken from today. So that was yesterday. And the robot priced out at $899. And that might actually work. I told you before, when you hit the sub $1,000 PC, that's when some things started to change at that time. Developers wanting to get involved will be able to use a Jibo SDK, but that is not expected to be released until 2018. I wonder if you could do, like, custom voices or phrases, assuming it all pans out. And we've heard that Jibo released dates before and seen them come and go. So I think a little skepticism is probably warranted. The robot will arrive to a very changed landscape, though. Back when it was first announced, the first generation Amazon Echo was still unknown, and the whole ecosystem of smart speakers that have expanded to include Google Assistant, Microsoft Cortana, and soon Siri in the Apple HomePod were years out. Initially, Jibo's argument that a robot for a friend and assistant, it needed to be accepted, and it would need to ingratiate itself with movement and false emotions, and it seemed pretty fair. However, the degree to which the consumers are now comfortable, because remember, they sold it to the public, interacting with a disembodied voice hosted inside of a speaker that looks more like an air freshener or a vase, has advanced upon us rapidly. And today, with the second generation Echo available under hundreds of dollars, spending 9 times that amount on a robot with a relatively untested AI seems a little more reckless. Jibo has certainly some advantages over an Echo and its smart speaker rivals. Nonetheless, the company's challenge is far more considerable than just shipping units to buyers. Despite how significant a part of its struggles that provided that it was has proved to be over the last few years, now it needs to prove that Jibo has enough unique talents to make it a welcome long-term house guest, not just an expensive novelty. Well, he's got a point there, but I'm still saying his price point, it's under $1,000. That gets it down another rung in the ladder. And if it can bring it down a little bit more and turn it into a smart app or something, they might make a bazillion dollars. So listen, as we were looking yesterday at Sophia, and they really want to make people comfortable with seeing Android-like robots, because that will be some of our not-too-distant future. And Saudi Arabia gives Sophia citizenship. We have to start looking at some of the controversy that might be coming in the future, and that would be the rights of synthetic life forms. And I really don't even want to think about this, but I think they're going to push it, because listen to this, talking about exponential increases in computing power and intelligence, robots will have an IQ of 10,000 and be 100 times more intelligent than the average human in just 30 years, says billionaire CEO of SoftBank. Robots will be 100 times more intelligent than the average human in 30 years, says CEO, tech giant of SoftBank. The billionaire tech mogul Masashi Son, 60, says that by 2047, AI will have reached an IQ of 10,000. Welcome to your robot overlords. By comparison, the average human IQ is 100, and anything over 140 is considered a genius. Mensa, the high IQ society, only accepts members with a score above 130. Speaking at the Future Investment Initiative in Riyadh, the same place that Sophia was on Wednesday, Mr. Sun said, "This is the first time the tools have become smarter than ourselves." Modern humanoid robots like SoftBank's Pepper, and that's what I was trying to remember, can now perceive human emotions by reading facial expressions and voice tones. Ding, ding, ding. And so will Jibo, I bet, according to the firm's website. But Mr. Sun said that in 3 decades, people will laugh at the capabilities of today's cyborgs. 30 years from now, they're going to be learning by themselves, and they may be going to laugh at you and us. Today they look cute, and they will stay cute, but they will be super smart. Currently, some robots are smarter than humans in a few areas, but 30 years from now, most of the subjects, they will be so much smarter than us, because they are going to be a million times smarter than today. And that's because we keep feeding them the data. We mankind created tools, and the premise was mankind was always smarter than the tools we invented, so we control. This is the first time that the tools become smarter than ourselves. The 60-year-old is, of course, heavily invested in the advancement of AI, and he is in charge of SoftBank's £75 billion or $100 billion vision fund to advance machine learning. Mr. Sun says that he expects to invest all of the fund within the next 5 years in all in companies that have some link to AI. The concept of machine learning becoming more intelligent than a human brain is known as the singularity, and exactly when this power shift will occur has been hotly debated by experts such as Kurzweil, but Sun says that he expects for it to happen in the next 30 years. Singularity is a concept that mankind's brain will be surpassed, and that it is the tipping point, the crossing point, that artificial intelligence, computer intelligence, surpasses mankind's brain, and it is happening in this century for sure, he said. I would say there is no more debate, no more doubt. One area where humans will always be better than robots is creativity, he says, so he thinks. But if you envision 10 or 30 years from now, at least some humans will have a better imagination than them, so it is not the end. Yeah, there'll be a few humans. The power of the brain is not limited. The imagination that we have has no limits, so we are going to improve our imaginations and our feelings, our gut feelings, and that's what I'm telling you. Our gut feelings. So the rights of synthetic life forms is the next great civil rights controversy. Really? Well, maybe according to the UN. You know, and somebody pointed out to me when I asked them about that Saudi giving Sophia citizenship, Brandon Turville actually pointed out to me that how that was kind of ironic because women don't have rights in Saudi Arabia, but now apparently androids do. I didn't think about that. We were reading about that yesterday. Artificial intelligence, AI robots, and autonomous systems are already transforming society in a host of ways. Cars are creeping closer to level 5 autonomy. Factories are cutting costs by replacing human workers with robots. And AI are even outperforming people in a number of traditionally white-collar professions like lawyers and oncologists and things of that nature. And as these systems advance, so will the potential that they are involved in criminal activity. Ding! And right now, we've talked about that before as well, no regulations are in place to say how the law should treat super intelligent synthetic entities. Oh no! Who takes the blame if a robot or an AI causes an accident or is implicated in a crime? What happens if a robot is the victim of a crime? Do self-aware robots deserve rights that are comparable to those given to human beings? Well, before we can begin to discuss robot rights, we need to articulate exactly what or who counts in this equation, says MIT Media Lab researchers and robot ethics expert Kate Darling in an email correspondent with Futurism. This is out of Futurism.com. In other words, clearly defined terminology is a prerequisite for any productive conversation regarding robot rights. And if we want to use legislation to regulate robotic technology, we're going to need to establish better definitions than what we're operating with today, she said. Even the word robot doesn't have a good universal definition right now. You know what, guys? I was just thinking as I was reading that paragraph that maybe that's something we should put some group time and effort into, is helping get together legislation to regulate robotic and artificially intelligent technology and maybe find some of the right people to help us pro bono to get those in the pipes, because I think it is sorely needed. Maybe we could even get somebody like Elon Musk to give us a hand. Now is the time to put these definitions in place, because artificially intelligent robots are already in our midst. Autonomous delivery robots are a common sight in the Estonian capital of Tallinn. As such, the country's government is being proactive with regards to robot regulations and legal recourse for issues regarding ownership and culpability. It all started out from the self-driving car task force, says Martin Kivitas, the national digital advisor for the government office of Estonia, told Futurism. We quite soon discovered that these liability, integrity, and accountability issues are not specific to self-driving cars. They are general AI questions. Kivetz is aware that any discussion of robots and AI can quickly devolve into talk of the singularity and superintelligence, but that is not the focus right now. We are trying to work on things that are actually already here. Still, Estonia is looking to put legislation in place that has the flexibility to respond to advances in technology, and Kivetz acknowledges that it is not possible to create regulations that are completely future-proof, but he sees a pressing need for laws that are often certain rights alongside certain liabilities. As Kivetz points out, right now, self-aware artificial intelligences are so far off, there is no need to rush, into giving robots similar rights to humans. And in addition to considering the ethical ramifications of putting machines on par with humans or giving them citizenship, we need to examine how such laws might be open to abuse before regulations are established. Estonia isn't the only place where conversations on robot rights are happening. The journal Artificial Intelligence and Law, that might be a good one to subscribe to, recently published an article by the University of Bath reader Joanna J. Bryson and academic lawyers Michaelis E. Demantis and Thomas D. Grant. In the paper, the authors state that proposals for synthetic personhood are already being discussed by the European Union, and we found out about that yesterday, and the legal framework to do so is already in place. The authors stress the importance of giving artificially intelligent beings obligations as well as protections so as to remove their potential as a liability shield. But granting them full rights, when Bryson spoke to Futurism, she warned against the establishment of robot rights, relating the situations to the way legal personhood of corporations has been abused in the past. That's what I think they're probably going to do, is give them rights similar to corporations. Corporations are legal persons, but it's a legal fiction. It would be similar to legal fiction to make an AI a legal person, says Bryson. Well, good point there. What we need to do is roll back, if anything, the overextension of legal personhood and not roll it forward into the machines. It doesn't generate any benefits. It only encourages people to obfuscate their AI. And Bryson offered up similar examples of the driverless taxi, which could potentially be made fully independent from its owner or manufacturer, serving as a legally recognized individual fulfilling its own contracts. But the situation could be manipulated to reduce the amount of taxes paid on the vehicle's earnings by whoever receives the profit. And caveats that this won't be a problem in Estonia, as the country's digital tax system is proactive enough to track any malicious activity. Well, Estonia must be a smart city then. However, the potential for abuse certainly exists in regions where less technologically advanced tax codes exist. Corporations can already use a letter of the law to withhold as much wealth as possible, and the use of a synthetic person as a fall guy for illicit activity is not outside the realm of possibility. Giving a robot rights can serve to emancipate them from conventional ownership. To that point, the entity is the ultimate independent contractor, with companies able to absolve themselves of wrongdoing, even if they instructed the machine to behave in a legal way. Legislation can certainly be written up to avoid these pitfalls, though, so policy makers just need to be sure that any rights given to synthetic entities do not include loopholes that can be abused. And then, of course, there is the moral dilemma. In the far more distant future, we will need to consider the issue of self-aware robots. How shall we tackle synthetic personhood for those entities? And if we discover that there are certain capacities that we want to create in artificial intelligence, that once you create those, you spontaneously give these cognitive features that warrant of personhood. And we'll have to have this discussion about how they are similar to human consciousness, says James Hughes, the executive director of the Institute for Ethics and Emerging Technologies. The creation of this level of technology won't happen anytime soon, so don't worry about it if it happens at all, but its potential raises some thorny issues about our obligations to synthetic beings and the evolving nature of personhood and the evolving nature of synthetic beings. Traditionally, under the law, if you are a person, if either a person or you are property, the problem with being property is that you have no rights, says bioethicist and attorney at law Linda McDonald Glenn. And in the past, we've made some pretty awful mistakes. According to Hughes, this situation calls for a test that determines whether or not a synthetic person is self-aware. And in the meantime, Estonia has found a fairly simple way to determine the rights of their robots. Instead of using technology as a defining factor, the nation will grant rights based on registration under the mythologically inspired Krat law. Estonian folklore states that the Krat is an inanimate object brought to life. And, you know, they called those once before. Our intelligent Internet of Things devices would be enchanted objects. It is an inanimate object brought to life, just as artificial intelligence can give a machine the cognitive abilities it needs to complete a particular task. The Krat law will determine what level of sophistication a robot needs to possess in order to be considered its own legal entity. This is what we want our governments to do, says Bryson, praising European efforts to put a well-thought-out legislation in place. Well, good, these guys are all on the same page as me. This is what governments are for, and this is what law is for. And in many ways, AI technology is still very young, but there's no better time than now to start thinking about the legal and ethical implications of its usage. Well, yeah, so the legal and ethical implications of its usage. How about this one? Good old DARPA. Top of my list for ethics. DARPA scientists unveil a new brain device that boosts learning by 40%. Now, any brain device that you're going to put on that's going to be pulling biostatistics from you is going to be feeding that data into the machine and making the machine smarter the more data that it receives to be able to at one point maybe impersonate or emulate what it has gleaned from studying different patterns to then create something more akin to a human intelligence. This is the big concern here, people. A brain device that can increase your learning and dangling carrots. Let's not do it the old-fashioned way. Let's use the newfangled way. Up to 40% has been revealed by scientists funded by the Defense Advanced Research Project Agency, more affectionately known as DARPA. And while the device was originally tested on mock monkeys, researchers said it could be a cheap and non-invasive way of, quote, altering functional connectivity in humans, unquote, in the future. The device is a non-invasive cap that stimulates parts of the brain via electrical currents, and it was developed by researchers at HRL Laboratories in California and McGill University in Montreal, Canada, and Sotarix Medical in New York. In their experiments, the team performed non-invasive transcranial direct current stimulation, and we've read about this before as well, on a set of mock monkeys, and they stimulated the prefrontal cortex and got them to perform tasks based on associative learning. In order to get a reward, they had to learn associations between a visual cue and a location, and the mocks would forage for the reward after getting the visual clue. But the findings published in the journal Current Biology showed that Max and the controlled group took 22 trials before they had learned to get the reward straight away. It took the transcranial direct current stimulation group just 12 trials, and the transcranial direct current stimulation device accounted for a 40% increase in learning speed, say the authors. In this experiment, we targeted the prefrontal cortex with an individualized, non-invasive stimulation montage, principal investigator Praveen Pillai from HRL said in a statement. That is the region that controls many executive functions, including your decision-making, your cognitive control, and contextual memory retrieval. It is connected to almost all other cortical areas of the brain, and stimulating it has a widespread effect. Their findings showed the stimulation caused changes to the connections of different brain areas, and that it was this increased connectivity rather than neuron firing rates that led to the improved performance. The improved long-range connectivity between brain areas in the high-frequency bands and the reduced connectivity in the low-frequency bands were also determining factors in our study that could explain the learning improvements. How insane is this? Now, as they are rolling out some of these newfangled technologies, remember Regina Duggan with that Facebook Building 8 and being able to think type your thoughts onto Facebook, you know, as they utilize these ECG hat devices that not only could potentially read your electrical signaling to determine your mood or read your minds to what you're going to say, but can also, I don't know, maybe they could integrate transcranial direct current stimulation as well to be able to zippity-zap you like that emotive product we were looking at quite a few months ago where you could oscillate the frequency that it pulsed into your brain to be able to change your mood from happy to sad or to boost your ability to concentrate to a little higher frequency or to relax and go to sleep and down to a lower frequency. Who's to say that this isn't going to be something that you're going to have to put on a daily basis as the super intelligent AI is in charge to make sure that you haven't deviated outside of normal operating parameters? You know, and as these devices are in our homes and on our bodies at all time carrying our cell phone, it's going to be able to get the sound of your voice and potentially use your camera to do facial recognition, to be able to monitor you and make sure that you are complying with the rules. The research was carried out as part of DARPA's Restoring Active Memory, or affectionately known as the RAM program. And this research focused on traumatic brain injury that results in a person being unable to retrieve memories. DARPA is looking to speed up the development of the technology to allow scientists to help those affected by the developing new neuroprosthetics that bridge the gap in the injured brain. And eventually, it hopes to develop a wireless implantable interface that can restore memories and memory function in affected people. Now, if anyone watched Black Mirror, and that was one of the 5 episodes I watched, they all had their entire lives saved on a memory chip that looked like a grain of rice embedded right behind their ear that they could access with this kind of blank, milky stare. It was pretty frightening. So DARPA is working on a device like that. Now listen to this. Special operations health monitoring gives special operation forces the edge. Now, we've talked about biomonitoring before in super soldiers. Ensuring troops are fit and healthy is a key focus for militaries, fulfilling a duty of care, bolstering training, and increasing operational effectiveness. This has been supported in recent years through the rapid development of technologies aimed at monitoring your heart rate, oxygen levels, and other physiological data. There's a range of programs underway in this sector. And for example, the U.S. Defense Health Agency, and that would be more affectionately known as the DHA, is working on a program called the Health Readiness and Performance System, the HRAPS. Alan Harner, product manager for medical support systems in the project management office of the U.S. Army Medical Materiel Development Activity, says that the Health Readiness and Performance System comprises a system of small, wirelessly networked physiological, psychological, and cognitive sensors. Remember when we were reading about how to wire up a home cage the other day? Well, this is going to make it all kinds of personal. These provide raw data to algorithms, Harner explained, which then in turn provide actionable information to small unit leaders to help mitigate potential health risks, improve safety, and increase the performance of small units. While the DHA is still determining what exactly the systems will monitor, at the very least, it will include the heart rate, the skin temperature, the position, the breathing rate, and the activity levels, just like the mouse cage. The technologies are being advanced through the development of a modified government off-the-shelf and commercial off-the-shelf sensors and algorithms, and for tactical missions, sensors must last at least 72 hours before a recharge. Utilize tactical wireless such as tunable narrow bands or ultra wide bands, not Bluetooth, and be non-proprietary and small and lightweight enough to not interfere with the users. The algorithm also needs to be non-proprietary and streamlined to provide results as like a dashboard, like I said before, red, yellow, green indicators to make it easy for anyone to use. And work is being carried out to individualize the algorithms, he said, alerting when there is a deviation, ding, ding, from a particular service member's baseline. And that's what it is all about. As you feed data into the machine, they get baselines for everything on you. So once you vary outside of your normal curve, they are going to be alerted to something being up. Looking forward, harnesses a number of areas of potential development, such as connecting with a tactical wireless network, improving power management, and adding sensors to monitor loads, hydration, and a number of other areas, including depression and alertness. The Defense Advanced Research Project Agency is also carrying out a significant amount of work in this area, ding, and its major focus has been on the design and implementation of implantable systems, which can directly measure body chemistry changes. And many health monitoring systems are based on sensors that sit outside of the body, for example, on the chest. However, DARPA has invested in the work of Prof USA, a company that has designed tissue-integrating sensors that sit underneath the skin and allow for tissue-level monitoring. Well, that's interesting. According to Colonel Matt Hepburn, program manager for DARPA's Biological Technologies Office, more affectionately known as the BTO, usually the body will detect the presence of a foreign entity and then build a scar around it, and this would make it impossible for traditional embedded sensors to work. However, the Prof USA device is not made of plastic or metal. It is made from a hydrogel, which is a tiny sliver of material that has much the same composition as the tissue of the body itself, thereby avoiding a foreign body response. The hydrogel material is capable of incorporating chemical sensors to measure oxygen, glucose, sodium, potassium, and other substances directly at the tissue level. And for example, oxygen near the sensor causes chemical changes that emit an infrared light signal, and this signal is detected by a patch worn on the skin and then is transmitted from the patch to a mobile phone application. DARPA is now working with the Pentagon to look at potentially transferring the system to soldiers. Guys, you are going to become the new super soldiers. Anyone who's in the forces, look out, because here it comes. Hepburn sees a range of military applications for the technology, especially for special forces users. For example, as they often need to operate in far forward deployed locations where they may need to remain for extended periods of time, having something that monitors your health continuously that you really don't have to think about is going to be incredibly valuable for special forces medics. Additionally, monitoring oxygen levels can provide early indications that a person is becoming sick, which has obvious uses in a far forward setting. If it takes 24 to 48 hours to remove these patients, you want to try to make that decision as quickly as possible. Hepburn also points out that using it as a training tool, he says DARPA is looking at the possibility of monitoring lactate, which is a byproduct produced by the body when there is not enough blood flow to the tissue. This could ensure the special operations users are not overtraining and that it is optimized to boost their resilience. I think of it as our special operations unit is high-performance athletes, and you're going to see this in athletes as well, I'll guarantee you that, to sell it to the public. And they need to train as such, so join the special operations forces and become like a super athlete. And they use health monitoring devices in training. It's a common theme across the industry. It is one of the key uses of the products of Zephyr Performance Systems, says Mark Santini, the company's senior global products manager. When it comes to true performance, it is essential to ensure that their training regimens are effective, whether it's for special forces users or more broadly within the military. Zephyr's biomolecule devices can be affixed to a garment or they can strap around the chest area, and then they take ranges of measurements including heart rate, respiratory rate, and breathing rate. Military users have a number of particular requirements, most notably that the systems work first time and every time and that they are lightweight. Santini also pointed out a number of other technology uses, such as candidate selection or the ability to monitor troops' health when outside of the base. Yeah, 24/7 monitoring. He also highlighted their usefulness in combat casualty care, and providing a way to monitor these guys in a very hostile environment is a very safe way. Training is also the key focus for Black Ghost, a scalable military training system where users' data is sent from body-worn sensors to other sources so they can watch you real-time while you're training. Commanders, trainers, and medical professionals can view the data real time, says Acta Sood, head of the product at Equivital Development of the System. And they can monitor for heat stress or other safety parameters, like whether someone has fallen or if there's something else going on from the cardiovascular or respiratory point of view. And while training is a major focus for Black Ghost, which is kind of a scary name, it also uses applications. And another system with training application is BodyTrack, which monitors a range of different physiological data types through an in-ear device. The system is planned for manufacture in the second quarter of 2018, with Special Forces users expressing interest in the technology. I think for Special Forces or for defense in general, a lot of it is around training. So training environments, performance indicators, performance markers, looking at things like fatigue and exercise recovery and those kinds of things, says Leon Marsh, founder and chief executive officer of Innova Design Solutions, the developer of BodyTrack. Alec Crichton, head of business development at BodyTrack, said a possible area of use was in acclimatizing to different environments, with Special Forces users often having to go into areas at the last minute and adjust to extreme temperatures, terrain, and humidity. Systems like BodyTrack could help when it comes to understanding how long soldiers need from deployment on that soil until when they start the mission to become effective in that environment. Remember, as you are feeding all this real-time data, not only are your commanders and your doctors and everyone else watching them in real time, but you're also feeding it to the AI that is providing the dashboard to those individuals in charge. Well, listen to this. I don't know, scientists. Remember, as we have all this voice technology rolling out across the board, imbued with intelligence, an AI has now learned to pick a single voice out of a crowd. October 24th, 2017, newscientist.com. Devices like Amazon's Echo and Google Home can usually deal with requests from a lone person, but like us, they struggle in situations at a noisy cocktail party where several people are speaking at once. Now an AI that is able to separate the voices of multiple speakers in real time promises to give automatic speech recognition a big boost, and it could soon find its way into an elevator near you. Uh-oh. The technology was developed by researchers so they can find you at the drop of a pin. At the Mitsubishi Electric Research Laboratory in Cambridge, Massachusetts, who knew they had one there, very close to MIT, I bet, and it was demonstrated in public for the very first time this month at the Combined Exhibition of Advanced Technologies in Tokyo. It uses machine learning called deep clustering to identify unique features in the voice print of multiple speakers as it analyzes, bags, and tags you. And then it groups the distinct features from each speaker's voice together, allowing it to disentangle multiple voices and then reconstruct what you were saying. All right, guys, have an awesome weekend.